Welcome to a World of Good podcast. I'm Nate Tatman.
And I'm Andrew Gale.
And we are two friends
who love Jesus,
care about the church,
and travel the world to share stories of people who do the same.
Our conversations happen in all kinds of places.
Like a coffee shop in an airport terminal.
Or even the back of a crowded taxi.
But no matter where we go, from Argentina to Zimbabwe,
we capture stories of the good God is doing around the world.
And we hope those stories will do you a world of good.
Welcome to a World of Good podcast. My name is Nate Tatman, and I am currently in Beirut, Lebanon. I'm here with my friend Kareem. Kareem, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Nate. Good to have you.
Yeah, good to be here and looking forward to hearing and sharing your story with our listeners. For those of you that don't know, Kareem is the director for Cedar Home, Girls Home here in Beirut. And lots of other things happening as well, but we'll keep it at that for now. And you serve in this capacity along with your wife, Rita. You have your two daughters with you. And again, we'll kind of get into your story here, but just maybe just sharing a little bit about your background, who you are, and where you're from.
Sure. I was born in Lebanon in a town called Beit Shabeb, 30 minutes away from here in 1971. And I've lived there up to my 18th year. Until the Syrians occupied our part of Lebanon. It was a beautiful upbringing life. We're five kids, mom and dad. Lebanon, as you see, a beautiful place.
Very beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, but I decided to leave the idea of being under an occupying army, something very different than our culture and our way of life. I decided to leave. And there was an opportunity to go to Kuwait with my brother-in-law.
Okay.
Right after Saddam Hussein, left Kuwait, we came in. So I went and the oil wells were still on fire. It was chaotic. I loved it,
So you moved from one sense of chaos in this country to another country where
I could do whatever I want, My character back then loved chaos. Chaos was like a kind of opportunity for me and stuff. So hold that thought about the Syrians occupying Lebanon and me leaving because it has to do with me coming back. So that's a bit of history of my birth and
And maybe without going into too much detail, but maybe just share about what life was like for Lebanese Christians during that time of the civil war when the Syrians occupied here. What was just daily general life like?
Yes. It's very difficult to live under occupation. You're occupied, so your decision is not yours. You have to abide by whoever's occupying you. But the Lebanese were always alive. They loved life. We figured out ways to maintain our way of life. So we were in the Christian part of Beirut, and you know how Lebanon is liberal and people are highly educated, so we loved being social with each other. I remember we never slept and the door locked. It was closed, never locked, and Lebanon was very vibrant and financially doing great. Imagine now we're not occupied by any army, but back then with occupation, we were financially doing much, much, much better than now. So we were in private schools. Everything was great. I would say great memories from back then. But the idea of being under an army, freedom to me has always meant a lot. So I wanted my freedom. So I decided to
leave. Yes. And was it, I guess, in the simplest terms, was it dangerous to leave, or was it fairly? Was it hard or difficult to leave, or was it? Did you have a pretty easy path?
I had no offer, where my brother-in-law said I got a construction contract in Kuwait, I didn't have the means to go. I was 18 years old. I didn't know anything beside our town. Beirut was a different country to me. So going from Lebanon to Kuwait was a big step, but an amazing step. Yeah. It helped me realize that the world is much bigger than my town.
For sure. And so you arrived into Kuwait and you had a life-changing experience there as well, right?
Exactly. It's there that I met the first evangelical Christian. We were roommates. It was very interesting to me to meet such a person who was so committed to, following Jesus. He read his Bible daily at night. All our conversations were inspiring. You know, he was a very ethical and, you know, moral person, very positive, loved life. I lived in a place where, you know, swearing was okay, you know, bad jokes were okay, you know. But he had nothing of that. He was so focused on his profession, very intentional. I was like, wow, I mean, like, who's that guy now? Why is he like that? I never connected that with faith because I don't have such an experience. Now, poor guy, he was a one-year-old Christian.
Oh, wow.
So his knowledge of like how to share his experience was so poor. So he relied a lot on Old Testament stories like Jonah swallowed, the whale swallowed Jonah. So like, give me a break, Isam. I mean, all this knowledge and being smart, you want to convince me? Or like, you know, he was trying to saying that God can do great things like a donkey spoke. Like, give me a break. Like, so anyways, but what really drew me was the conversation about the cross. Mm. Like someone dying on the cross so that I don't die, yet I'm given a chance to become a new person. That stuck in my mind. Because at the same time, he was witnessing to me, there were clerics that would visit our place of work. And I think because my name is Kareem and I was 18 year old, they found it easy to speak to me. So they were trying a lot to convert me to Islam. And the only thing I remembered while I argued, not because I loved Jesus or I was, you know, that kind of person with faith, it was just ego. I just wanted to offer something while they offered something. So I only remembered that, wow, there was someone called Jesus that had so much love that he decided to die for someone like me on the cross and after 3 days, rise from the dead and, you know, and give us all that eternal life if we follow him and pursue and have and come into this love relationship. Whenever they say, you know, Kareem, say with us, La ilaha illallah. And you know, Muhammad, you know that. I would say the first part, La ilaha illallah. There's no God but God. They say, continue. I said, no. I've never met Muhammad. I don't know where Muhammad is. I've heard of Jesus, and they would just go crazy. Jesus is not the right prophet. He died. The Bible is wrong. The right Bible is hidden. I said, hidden where? I know this Bible only. Anyway, just to focus on one idea, whatever stuck in my mind is one thing, Christ's love on the cross. At the end of the day, you know, I did not say what they asked me to say. That's why they kicked me out of Kuwait. I was asked to leave in 24 hours.
Wow.
Because they just put it in their mind, this guy is not going to convert. So his punishment is, you know, leave.
Wow. So the authorities, the police, military, whoever came to you because of what the clerics, they reported.
Exactly.
Reported you and all
our things. Sponsor was the chief of police in the city we were working.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. And he used to visit with them. So he said, Kareem, you're out. Yeah. So, you know, the last sentence I remember I said to them is that this, you know, I want to thank you for wanting to give me the best you have.
Yeah.
Your faith. But you know what? You are offering a story. And I've heard another story. They are both stories to me. I've never met Jesus. I've never met Muhammad. But I love that story more.
Mm.
You know, the story of the cross. Mm-hmm. At that time, was still a story, you know?
Yeah, it was a story for you.
It just grabbed me inside out. I was kicked now. I come back to Lebanon. You know, there's a continuation. And I searched for the guy who I was roommate with because he left earlier. And that's where I first went to an evangelical church.
Mm.
And you know, it was amazing. Like, I got the best welcome. You know how they welcome you folks.
Yeah.
That journey began, you know, me being part of the church, getting to know people, getting involved in ministry. And after a year, you know, I gave my life to Jesus, decided like in a prayer meeting, nobody knew. I just prayed like, Jesus, I want to be a disciple. I mean, I love this life. Thank you for, you know, saving me. I'm available.
And had you grown up with faith in the home?
No.
Was there any kind of faith or religious?
Not a religious family at all. We lived right beside the Maronite church. I don't remember my parents going there unless there was a funeral or a wedding. But my parents are great folks, very, very ethical, I never heard them swear or like do something bad. Nice, but faith mm-hmm. doesn't exist. Like Jesus is never a topic. Mm-hmm. Salvation is never a topic. Forgiveness is never a topic. Eternal life is mm-hmm. never. It's just, you know, you live now, you do well, you make money, you're successful, you good reputation, yep. then you die, and thank yep. you so much.
Yep. For our listeners, they may not know or have heard of the Maronite Church. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the Maronite Church? What do they believe?
Yeah.
What makes it different from the Evangelical Protestant uh-huh. Church? You also have the Catholic mm-hmm. Church, mm-hmm. and then you have the Maronite mm-hmm. Church.
The Maronite Church is a 1,400-year-old church. It was started by a monk, a Syrian monk that was persecuted in Syria. He fled to Lebanon and started having followers called the Maronites. Hmm. Now in year, if I'm not mistaken, 900, I can be wrong, but around that, they came under the Catholic Church.
Oh, wow.
So Maronites can be considered as Eastern Catholics. We have our own liturgy. The Maronite Church has a specific liturgy, half in Arabic, half in Syriac language.
Mm.
So, and they are the biggest Christian group in Lebanon.
Wow.
Yeah, I was born to that faith. In Lebanon, when you get born, your denomination is on your ID.
Yeah.
So I'm
you have
on,
to carry that around.
Yeah, exactly. With you,
yeah.
So I'm called a Maronite in Lebanon.
Wow. Okay, so again, kind of fast forward in your story, you come back to Lebanon, you join an evangelical church. Then what happens?
Then, you know, I stayed here for, if I'm not mistaken, 1996. So I come back at 1994, 1996, I go to Saudi Arabia. Now, those 2 years, I was very active at church, evangelism, leading worship, Bible study, and we almost had a meeting every day because the church was close to my town. Mm. And as long as I remember, I'm the only person from that town that went to an evangelical church. So the folks at church were like, wow, someone from that, you know, and amazing group. Then in 1996, I went to Saudi Arabia again because I couldn't do with being under a foreign mm-hmm. army. You know, once I was visiting my friend and I had to pass through a Syrian checkpoint at night. I was stopped.
In Lebanon.
Yes, and interrogated. Lebanon. And that to me was like a reminder that no, I cannot do
yeah.
this. So I got a job offer in Saudi as a computer store manager.
Okay.
Although I had nothing to do with computers, but I got the job. So I went there. There, I joined the underground church.
Mm.
Amazing experience. You know, again, when you're in that situation, you know, and there were so many Christians in that group, like all denominations, like predominantly evangelical, and they led the group, but there were all kinds of Christian, and the unity was amazing.
Mm.
When you're in persecution, you no longer think about, you know, what differentiates
yeah.
us. It's a very unifying, it was an amazing time until 2000, where I got my immigration visa to Canada. Now, why did I immigrate to Canada? I wanted to pursue my education, but there wasn't any opportunity in Saudi, very, you know, segregated community. And I said, you know, I want to go to where I can feel, you know, and live freedom.
Yeah.
So it was the US or Canada.
Yeah.
Canada was easiest. In 1 year, I got my visa and yeah. another journey started there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So was it prior to moving to Canada you met somebody special as well?
Yes,
was,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank
so,
you for reminding
yeah,
me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I wanted to make sure we yeah, start
exactly.
that part of the story
yes.
because it is a long story.
Oh, yeah.
It was a year. So before you left for Canada, you met somebody special.
Yeah. So in Saudi, you get a 1 month paid vacation. And I always came back to Lebanon for vacation and I made sure I go when there were those, you know, church retreats,
yeah.
you know, to see my friends. And in one of the retreats, I see a beautiful girl coming in her own with a friend in a car passing before me. I said, wow. Like, and mind you, I never had a girlfriend or, you know, my life wouldn't allow, you know, dating because I'm always mm. traveling and trying to make a living. So, but when I saw Rita, it was like, what happened? Like, I couldn't. So, you know, we met and we spoke and she agreed on us continuing the conversation after I went back to Saudi. And yeah, it was a beautiful journey, but difficult because it was 7 years of long distance. You know,
wow.
I was in Saudi, then I went to Canada.
In
so
Canada.
It was on and off, on and off. And, but, you know, we got engaged, but we broke up twice, actually.
Mm.
You know, trying to make a living in Canada wasn't easy. A new country, new everything. It took from
Did you have any contacts there? Anybody that you knew?
I had a friend. One single friend. Yeah, Christian friend that I met in Lebanon when I was at church. Now, Rita felt that, you know, I needed more time to focus. So she said, you know, let's put this on the back burner. No pressure. So I think she was much wiser than me. Now, in 2006, when I was in Canada and there was the 30 days war with Israel, a very bad, you know, attack. Rita's town was badly attacked. Wow. And I was thinking, we weren't talking then. Then I said, you know, Karim, pick up the phone. I mean, she's your sister in Christ at the end of the day. So I picked up the phone and that rebooted the relationship. A year after that, we got married in Lebanon.
Wow.
And Rita back then, you know, a year before meeting me, had put in an immigration application to Canada. When we got married, she already had her visa. We got married.
Perfect.
We go back to Canada together. Yeah.
So you start your life in Canada and you lived there for how many years?
So from 2000 till 2012 when we came back to Lebanon.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I believe, because we were talking about this earlier, it was maybe for a year or two, both of you, maybe kind of separately, started feeling this kind of call that God was putting in your hearts in terms of returning back to Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe just share about that period of your life.
So in 2009, around that time, we were both like having this feeling like about Lebanon. Can I go there? We wanted to serve kids because we were kids during war and we understand how bad that can be. And, you know, we worked for fantastic companies that were okay to give us a 1 year of unpaid leave.
Mm.
And once in a morning we shared and, you want to go as well? So let's make it happen. She asked her company, I asked my company. They said, yes, whenever you want to do that, put in a request and we'll honor it. And then we visited our pastor. It was a Canadian church, and we discussed with Pastor Barry, this is what we're thinking, we're feeling. He said, great, go. And I'm going to, you know, pray with you and for you until this happens. I said, oh, great, we have the first supporter. So
yeah.
On the next meeting with him, he invited a missionary from our organization, the organization we're with now. And he said the same thing, like, great, guys, if you want to come, I think it's great. If Pastor Barry is recommending you, I think it's going to be easy. And then we followed the process to join the mission organization we're with. So we were appointed. So then, you know, psychological assessment, training, you know, fundraising and so forth. And in 2012, we come to Lebanon. Now, before that, you know, the project for us was to open a shelter in Beirut.
Mm.
And our friend, Rita's pastor in Lebanon, was ready to give us a full floor of his building to run this operation for free. He loved that we would come back. Rita was the treasurer of the church and she was like his daughter. Now, while we were in the process of gathering, you know, reference letters, my friend in Beirut said, hey, Karim, so you're coming to Lebanon to do this and that. Would you consider being executive director for a fantastic ministry called Cedar Home that's searching for an executive director? They need one and they're not in a very good shape. And I've never heard of Cedar Home before. So what I did is I visited. You know, he got me a meeting with them. I visited the board and the folks here and I thought, yeah, I mean, I can do this. Wonderful folks. And we met. I heard what they had to say. And I took it, from a good heart as if an opportunity presented itself. And I told Rita, hey, this might be an opportunity for us to get reacquainted with Lebanon because I've left.
Because you had been gone for so
exactly,
long.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've never ran a charity before. I've never did fundraising. So maybe this is a good platform also to meet the people in Lebanon. So we said, yes, we'll help you for a year. So we come in 2012 and this is now our, 11th and a half year.
Yeah.
At Cedar Home.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, wow. Yeah. And since then, you've had kids as well. You have two daughters.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe just share a little bit about the ministry of Cedar Home overall, the programs that you run, and then, the kind of the vision moving forward.
Sure. We had Naomi and Naya in Canada when we came back to Lebanon. Naomi was 2 years old. Naya was 2 months old.
Wow.
So they didn't remember Canada.
Yeah.
We don't remember
all the cold weather.
No. We had the opportunity to go last year, summer, all together. They loved it. Wow. Anyways, we come to Cedar Home. Cedar Home is a today is a 72-year-old ministry.
Wow.
It was started in 1950.
Wow.
And it continues up to today. What we do simply, or high-level explanation, we help girls, orphaned, disadvantaged, refugees, any girls that need a help in a residential program. So we have this residential program where we host the girls, we take care of them holistically. And Cedar Home is a Christian ministry, you know, Christ and teaching the Bible is core mm-hmm. here. We do this in our 5-floor campus in town of Salim in Mount Lebanon. The vision is to continue doing what we do best. Now, our latest addition to the vision is to start a boys' home.
Mm-hmm.
The project is still in fundraising process, but we expect to start renovating the campus where we're going to run that ministry mid this year. The aim is to help boys in some form of child labor, where we're going to take them in, teach mm-hmm. them a trade, take care of them, you know, and spirituality is a core component mm-hmm. for us. We want the boys, like we do with the girls here, to know Christ, to be part of the church, and to grow with having a nice network called church,
yeah.
Christians.
Yeah.
So this is our life, our 24-hour job, yeah. Our 24 hours calling. We breathe this ministry. We love it. It's not easy. It is a difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
But the reward behind it, you know, is second to none. Mm. You know, I don't think Rita and I will ever go to any corporate world or secular. We love ministry. We yeah. love, you know, serving in the kingdom. You know,
yeah.
we love the fact that, you know, Jesus is using us with children to
yeah.
change their lives.
And Rita's background is in education.
Yes, exactly.
And so maybe just share a little bit about the roles that you guys serve in here at Cedar Home.
Mm-mm. So Rita is a professional teacher. She's done that in Lebanon, a bit of that in Canada before moving to corporate world. Rita, whenever I'm asked, I say Rita is core in this ministry. I'm not. Because I do the business side and I do stuff with the girls like discipleship or sports whenever she schedules time for me. But she is the person that leads the care department, mm-hmm. meaning everything about the girls, spirituality, education, social life, health, every aspect of life. And she does it like not only because she's equipped, and she's my wife. I say this with confidence. She has the full heart for it. Mm. Like they, actually, we were with the girls like half an hour ago, and
yeah,
I asked,
yeah.
"So, who do you prefer?"
Yeah, I thought I'd make it kind of fun. And
exactly.
My girls, they know I'm notorious for this at home. I always like to add a little competition, and so I thought, I'm just gonna ask this question and see who their favorite is. Is it Kareem or Rita?
Exactly.
Which I don't know if I ever got an account.
And you did. One said Rita, the other said Kareem and Rita. Kids.
It's because you were there.
Probably, I don't know. Yes, but I can tell you for sure. I mean, Rita is amazing with the girls.
Yeah,
and we play a, you know, again, naturally we are role models here. I act with Rita and Naomi and Naya in front of the girls like we do at home, if we need to hug, if we're, I don't know. So they see a functional, healthy family mom and dad in front of them, because the majority of them have dysfunctional families. So yeah, Rita plays that role. She plays it beautifully, full dedication. You know, 11 years of committed ministry, regardless of what happened in Lebanon in those 11 years, explosion of Beirut, around 30 assassinations with car bombs.
Wow.
Three or four street fights, big street fights, economic collapse, people losing their money in the banks. 11 years taught us one thing. The commitment and the consistency is because Jesus is walking either a step ahead or beside us.
Yeah.
You know, we follow. And it's beautiful, you know. If we rely on our simple humanity, we probably would think, Canada would be better for Naomi and Naya. You can get anything online. Everything's there. But it's not about that. If it's about anything, is like really the purpose of us being anywhere. And so what's the purpose of us being in Lebanon is to do this specific role,
mm-hmm.
helping those girls. And we're very happy we are called to do that. Mm.
And I know, just spending these last few days with you, you're focused on the here and now. but you're always thinking about what's next. And and those questions center around what are the needs of the girls. And so, or the children, because of this boys' vocational home that you're working on next. But I know another project at some point down the road is what happens after the girls especially leave this leave this home.
Exactly.
And the needs that they have.
Sure.
You just want to share a little bit about some of the challenges there.
Sure, sure. So Cedar Home for Girls is set. It's up and running. Boys' home by the beginning or second quarter of 2024. There is a question we need to answer, and we're working on the answer to that. We have a girl who's going to graduate next year. She's going to go to college. Now, in our system here, we don't keep care for adults. It's only for children, so under 18.
And that's legal government requirements.
Yes,
You're bound by law to only focus on that age.
Exactly. Yeah. And the dynamics of caring for an adult is different even legally. We cannot do it, you know. So we're thinking, but to go back a bit, Lebanon is not in a situation economically or socially or whatever to have an 18 or a 19-year-old girl go into the in life and easily get access to university, food, accommodation, transportation, health. Those things don't exist. And the girls don't have, even like regular families now are struggling to meet the basics of that. How come then someone without a mom or a dad or a mom and a dad? Yep. So we're thinking, can we start a new ministry where those girls will have a place to stay, different dynamics for their in and out and taking care of them, but a safe place where they will stay within the church network. They will stay having access to ministry at church, ministry opportunities. They will have access to transportation to their college. In return, or for their sake, they'll have to run their home. You know, they'll have to cook, they have to take care of the place, but it will be under our supervision as a ministry. We will remain being the big brother, you know, for that. And I think that's the next vision for us.
Yeah. Very good. Well, the name of this podcast is A World of Good. And so one of the questions, the last question we always ask is, what good is God doing in your world today? I'm kind of springing this question on you, I know.
Yes.
But if you could just share one or two things.
Sure. I can tell you, like I told you before, we feel we are in a vehicle, although I sit in the driver's seat, but it's on autopilot. God is doing everything. Like if you tell me, how are you successful with this project or that? I don't know. God just has been surprising us since 11 years. I think I can speak about two successes. First, I want to speak about us as a family. Again, my parents, upon every visit, they say, Karim, why are you still here? I mean, for your kids' sake, go back to Canada. School strikes here, insecurity. Look what's happening, you know. You have lived through this as a child and you paid the price. Don't let your kids pay the price. What God is doing in our family is that we are in this together. Me, Rita, Naomi, and Naya. We love being here. I mean, we are Canadian. I can fly tonight. A two-night flight and go. But what keeps us here transcends any, you know, comfortable life, you know. Maybe on the human level, because we can go to Canada, we feel we can stay. That's a factor. That's a blessing. But no, as a family, we are in this together. And I love how Naomi and Naya understand what mom and dad are doing. I love that they can live in the same building with the girls, be their friends, yet we have our privacy and manage how we live as a family. I love that, you know, if there's something we're doing for our kids is probably, I don't know, if they choose in the future to follow mom and dad's steps in serving others. So that's, I would say, this is a great success. The other success I would say is, I love how Cedar Home, although it's a small ministry, we're not like thousands of people. And like, we are one campus now, next year, another campus. But because Lebanon, everything in Lebanon seems to be failing and struggling, and Cedar Home is growing, I love that it's a message of hope for the Christian community. When they see there's a ministry flourishing and, you know, things happening, this is hope. And we want hope to be spread. You know, we are not, how to say, dropping Lebanon off our list. It's not going to be a failed state and the church will not be active. No. If there's any hope, it's Christ. It's anything that has to do with Jesus, either the church or ministries like Cedar Home that spread hope. And And I'm very happy this is, God is doing this nowadays.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Well, Karim, thank you so much. Thank you for the work that you and Rita are doing here and Naomi and Naya as well. Mm-hmm. It's so great to see a family doing ministry together. And that's one of the things that we've always prided ourselves and our family. And it's not always easy. There are many, many challenges in trying to raise your family and do ministry at the same time and together. Mm-hmm. So just thank you so much for your work and your commitment and your heart and your passion to the Lord, but also to the girls and hopefully soon the boys that you're going to be ministering to as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Nate.
Thanks for listening to A World of Good. A World of Good is a podcast production of Global Strategy and Church of God Ministries. Our theme song is Colorado by Leo Flores. If you want to join the conversation, visit us at Twitter at A World of Good Pod, on Instagram, A World of Good Podcast, or visit our website, chogglobal.org/A World of Good. And join us next time as we share more stories of good from around the world.